Okay, good evening. I really want to thank all of you for coming. For me, tonight is very special because it's been about 5 years since we originally came up with an idea of having a women's Beit Midrash in the Heights. And it's gone through a number of different iterations. And now, for the first time, we actually, tonight's the first event of women's Beit Midrash. And what's so special about women's Beit Midrash, when you think about it, is, you know, they had this video of the Chafetz Chaim that went viral the last, and that was at a Knesset Gedola, that was a good event, when the Beis Yaakov movement was officially approved, which was the beginning of women's Talmud Torah in a formal way. Women always learned, but to have schooling for women, to have formal Talmud Torah, this is a very recent development, about 100 years. That's it. And certainly women's Torah Sheba'al Peh is not studied as much as it should be. And we're at a point now in the modern Orthodox world and in our community that you just look around and there's a huge crowd, Baruch Hashem, of women who are dedicated to Torah, who are able to make their way through sources which are not necessarily so easy, besides the ones from Wikipedia, but the other sources are challenging. It's not an easy thing to do, and our community, I think, is ready to move to the next step, which is having a formal women's Beit Midrash. I hope tonight will be the beginning of something that's really special and will really be long-lasting, because, again, I think Klal Yisrael is ready for it. We need women who are educated and knowledgeable and are able to serve in positions of teaching Torah on the community level. And we're beginning that. So thank you for coming, and let's learn some Torah. Okay, now tonight's topic is called, I have no idea how to make up titles. So the titles were put together, I think Sarah or Atara? Atar put together the title. I chose like some really exciting title, something like Quinoa and Kidney Oats All with Q's. People thought that was like great, but apparently Going Against the Grain is a more exciting title. What we're going to be discussing tonight briefly, because obviously there's much more that can be said, is what exactly creates chametz on Pesach, and how does the practice of kitnios arrive, develop, and where was that practice put into place, in which parts of Europe, and finally some practical applications of it. That's what we're going to try to do in about 40 minutes. Now, it's not supposed to be a real lecture, so I hope people will pipe up and speak, and let's begin learning. The Mishnah teaches us that there are the following things that one fulfills the obligation, and presumably this is the obligation of matzah, right, on Pesach. Chitim, which is translated as, this is the easy one, wheat. Seorim is barley. Kusman shipon and shibulas shoel are also, one can fulfill the obligation of eating matzah with these five grains. These are the only five grains that, according to Torah law, are considered grain. As such, the chiyuv of challah min haTorah only sets in if it is one of these chamishas minei dagon. The brach of hamotzi can only be recited if it is one of the chamishas minei dagon. That's a din d'oraisa. There are other dinim d'oraisa in terms of, Brach of Hamotzi is din d'rabbanan, excuse me, the other din d'oraisa in terms of carbon mincha, which unfortunately we don't have anymore, but in order to be bread min haTorah, and matzah has to be bread min haTorah, you have to be one of these five grains. And the Gemara tells us, let's just skip the end of the Mishnah, Gemara Tana, the Braisa says that kusmin is min chitin. Who wants to take a stab at what kusmin is? Right. So the English tells us that kusmin is spelt, and spelt is a species of wheat. Okay, that's true. That's true. We're going to assume that that one is correct. Shibulas, shual, and shipon are min seorim.
The translation says that oats and rye are a species of barley. It ain't true. Now, if you want to know how you know it's not true, all you have to do is Google the Latin names. Again, we hated high school, no? But in high school, they try to explain, like, which one is the genus and the... What? Right? Okay, whatever it is. So, one goes first, one goes second. Shibola Shuel and Sheepone are both types of barley, according to the Gemara. And the problem is that if these are oats and rye, that cannot be barley. Barley has no relationship, living or dead, to oats or to rye. Now, there is a machlokas harishonim about how we translate some of these terms very briefly. Shibula shoal, Rashi says, is avina. Avina is, all you have to do is look in the study guide to economic botany. Avina is oats. So according to Rashi, Shibula shoal is oats. And it looks like the tail of a fox. Does oats look like the tail of a fox? The way it grows, not really. Not really at all. And Rashi, though, says that Shibula Shoal is oats. And Sheepone, according to Rashi, is sigla. Sigla is probably a species. It has to be some sort of species of barley. There are basically two-rowed barley and four-rowed barley. Anyone of you majored in botany or anything exciting like that? Right, because it's really boring. That's why no one majors in it. But the fact is, Rashi says that Shibula Shual is oats. The Meiri quotes that Shibula Shual is... Shibula Shual, the Meiri says... Meiri, by the way, is a Rishon from Provence. We'll talk about the different areas in a few moments. The Meiri died the beginning of the 14th century. Again, we never know when Rishonim are born. When they're born, they're just plain people. And then they die at some point, and then they're famous. So Shibula Shoal, according to the Meiri, is min echad shosa oren, which is called sigli in Laz. So according to the Meiri, sigli, which Rashi has as Sheepone, the Meiri has it as Shibula Shoal. There is... Yeah, the base Habechir Olam Meiri, right underneath Rashi. I'm sorry. Right? So Rashi says that Shibula Shoal are oats, and according to Rashi, Sheepone is the sigla, which is the other type of barley, the four-rowed barley. The Meiri says that Shibula Shoal is the other four-rowed type of barley. And there is a third explanation that's found in Rishonim that you can't get on Bar Ilan, so he didn't print out for you, for Ibn Nosson Av HaYeshiva, who assumes also that Shibula Shoal is a different type of barley. Now, the reason why this became famous is there is a professor, Yehuda Felix, who is actually the founding Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshivat Or HaChaim in Toronto. Anyone from Toronto who went to Opana? No? No one. Okay, there you have it. So Rabbi Yehuda Felix, Professor Yehuda Felix, had a book that he called Hachai Vatzomeach BaMishnah, the animals and the plants in the Mishnayos, and then he published a set of Mishnayos that had pictures. And when he published his book Hachai Vatzomeach, he began to question the identity of Shibula Shoal as oats. And then when he published his Mishnayos for kids with the pictures, he has a picture of oats, and he says, according to some, this is Shibula Shoal, and then he writes, this is a mistake. And then this became a big deal. It became a big deal because someone showed these Mishnayos to Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, and he began to frown, and he began to say, like, this is really not the way to go about doing it, that we don't write that things that Chazal said or things that Rishonim understood as what Chazal said is a mistake, and we don't do that. And then Rabbi Yonah Marzbach, who was the other Rosh Hashiva in Kol Torah with Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, published a very long essay in the book Ale Yonah, where he argued with Professor Felix, not that Professor Felix's questions were answered. His basic question was that oats did not exist in Israel at the time of the Mishnah. That's his basic question. Now, there are a few things to be said. The easiest thing to say about this is lo ra'inu eino ra'ya. The fact that oats, we don't know that oats exist at the time of the Mishnah. I live in the year 2015 in Washington Heights. I have no idea what plants were in Israel at the time of the Mishnah. I just don't know. I can't really conjecture. Now, what I can do is I could find some evidence based on the type of seeds that we dig up, etc., but that's not really dispositive. It's not conclusive. The fact is that just because I didn't find it doesn't mean it didn't exist. And this became a very big issue. If you'll take out the Art Scroll book on Brachos by Rabbi Forst, it's like a blue book, no? Many people have it at home. So look up oats in that book. I forgot what page it's on. But on the bottom of the page, there'll be a footnote where it says, there are certain, I don't know if they use the word modern orthodox, but that's what they mean. There's certain professors who question the identity of oats as one of the Chameshes Minei Dagon, but this goes against the entire tradition of Judaism. Something like that. I mean, you could look it up. But I might be embellishing a bit. But the fact is that this became a really big issue in terms of the identity of the species. Now, Rav Soloveitchik also once gave a Yartzeit drasha about identity of species. He was speaking about rice, and the Rav quoted from his great-grandfather, from the Beis Halevi, that when the issue of the Tcheles came out originally, there was a question about the identity of the fish for the Tcheles, and the Radziner Rebbe famously wanted to use a scuttlefish as Tcheles. Scuttlefish is very similar to a squid, no? Cuttlefish? What? Cuttlefish, thank you. He's a cuttlefish as the Tcheles. So the Beis Halevi said, even if you would prove that it is correct, but we can't use proofs in matters of Mesorah. Mesorah, the tradition, how we identify species, that goes down from generation to generation among Jews, and Mesorah can never be replaced. If you lose a Mesorah, you lost it, and you can't bring it back with all the evidence in the world. That's what the Beis Halevi said. And a similar thing is being said over here by Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, Rav Moshe Feinstein, that even though Professor Felix has pretty strong proofs that oats is not the Shibula Shul, nonetheless, we can't argue on the Mesorah. Our great-grandparents felt that oats is Shibula Shul. We have to assume the same thing. Rav Efrati, who is like one of the head honchos, by Rebbe Yashiv, he wrote an article in the OU Journal one year. Now, why he wrote an article in the OU Journal, I have no idea. But in the OU Mesorah, volume 13, Rav Efrati has an article about Zihui Shibula Shul, all about the identity of the, what he calls, quacker, which is oats. And he argues that you have to pass in the Shiloh based on what most Rishonim say. Yes, the Meiri assumes that oats is not Shibula Shul. Rav Nosson Afa Yeshiva assumes that oats is not Shibula Shul. But Rashi and the Rambam and go through the list. They assume that oats is Shibula Shul, and that's how you pass in the Shiloh. We have questions on it. Questions are questions. Nothing that we're going to say will answer these questions necessarily. But as a matter of halacha, oats counts as one of the Chameshes Minei Dagon, one of the five grains. This is very relevant because there are people out there who have celiac. Now, celiac is a really bad disease. There are different levels of celiac that people have. There's some people have celiac that when they consume gluten is generally speaking the product on grains that allows chametz to take place. That allows it to ferment. When people with celiac eat gluten, they get sick. Some people have very serious cases of celiac, and they get very sick. And the question is what you do for the mitzvah of eating matzah when you have celiac. So there was a a group of rabbonim in London around 25 years ago who arranged for the production of oat matzahs. Because oats are very low in gluten. And they produce these oat matzahs, and people eat them. They're actually like three times as regular matzahs, about half the price of gold. And oat matzahs are probably three times more than regular matzah, no? So you do the math. It's expensive. But the fact is that they produced these oat matzahs, and they had a hashgacha, and people were eating them. And then others began to say, whoa, 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 one second. You're not yotzei the mitzvah of matzah if you have oat matzah, necessarily, because if Professor Felix is right, oats is not one of the chameshes mini dagan. So it's like making a matzah out of buckwheat. It's like making a matzah out of some other quinoa, some other grain-like substance, right? That's not one of the five grains. And therefore, you don't get the mitzvah. Well, what do you do then if you assume that oats is not one of the chameshes mini dagan? What do you do if you have celiac? Well, you're afgehak tzaris. That's Yiddish for you're in trouble. Because what are you going to do? So some say, oh, eat a tiny amount. Well, if you have real serious condition of celiac, eating a tiny amount is not going to help you because you will get sick. Do you have to do mitzvahs when you get sick? Maybe. I'm not sure. The Gemara in the Nedarim speaks about how Rabbi Yehuda Anasi would drink the four kosos on Pesach and he'd have to wrap up his head all the way until Shavuos. He had such a major hangover from those four cups of wine. Right, you shouldn't know from it, that he had to wrap up his head from Pesach all the way until Shavuos. Does that mean you have to do mitzvahs when you get sick? Generally, we assume that, what, by Sukkos, I have an exemption of mitzta'er, no? I don't sit in the sukkah when I'm uncomfortable. On Pesach, I don't know if there's an exemption. There is no exemption of mitzta'er. Maybe I have to do mitzvahs even though I get sick, but that fails what we would call the sniff test in Judaism. It doesn't seem to be right. I have to do a mitzvah, I'm going to be sick. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi was probably super duper from. And we're assuming. You wrote Mishnayos, you're probably really from. Rabbi Yehuda Anasi did not write Mishnayos. He collated Mishnayos that was written by other Tanoim who lived a few generations before him. So we have these oat matzahs. Do you fulfill the mitzvah of matzahs with oat matzahs? Reb Moshe Sternbuch, who is not known for being particularly modern Orthodox, but he is known for chumras. So Rav Moshe Sternbuch, who's one of the heads of the Eda Charedis, he's actually number two in the Eda Charedis, he writes in this tshuva, Le'inyan etzem habaya shel achilas matzah l'misha asar l'chitim, when it comes to the real problem of eating matzah for one who is usher. Usher means, like, for health reasons, to eat wheat. Shamati sha'ofan hayom b'miuchad matzos shmura mishibolas shuel, which he says is Quaker. I heard that they make matzos from oats, and they are yotzei, shezehu mechamesh minim. Ubekobet sharei tzion hochiach sheha Quaker shalanu eno hashibolas shuel, sharei ha Quaker eno machmet klal. Oats does not ferment at all. Oats is virtually gluten-free. Now, what ferment?
It's totally gluten-free.
If it's done properly, it's totally gluten-free. Much of the oats have... There's always some gluten floating around in the air. What?
There's processing contamination.
Correct. So oats is supposed to be gluten-free. Now, we don't know exactly what chametz means. This is the dirty little secret in Judaism. What does it mean that wheat is chametz and rice is not chametz? What does that mean? What makes something chametz? So the Gemara tells us, yeah.
I mean, the Gemara says it has to do with whether, with time, with the passing of time, it has sirachon or...
So sirachon means what? Sirachon means that the rice, sirachon literally means become smelly. No? And I did this. When we did Pesachim in Yeshiva a few years ago, we did experiments that we took oat flour and wheat flour and barley flour and rice flour. After around 3 weeks, the rice stuff really smelled pretty bad. It looked similar to the wheat and the barley in that there are cracks in the top of it and it begins to get white. Nothing happened to the oats. I don't know if that means that I did it wrong. or my students did it wrong. There's actually someone in the shul who like Chanuch Berenson ran those experiments for me. It's very hard to know exactly what the chemical definition of chametz is. If you're interested, the first edition, the first issue ever of the journal Truman had a article that the difference it relates to the amount of beta amylase that's necessary to break down the proteins. Okay? Welcome to food chemistry. But the fact is, we don't know exactly what it means. But what's interesting is that Rav Moshe Sternbach says that Quaker is not Shibul HaShul. That means we have the head of the Eda Charedis agreeing with Professor Felix. What? He's calling the journal Shari Tzion. Shari Tzion is a journal that comes out of Eretz Yisrael about Mitzvot HaTzvuyos Ba'aretz. There was a rabbi, Zinluk or something, who wrote an article there about oats. And this became a big deal. This particular rabbi knew not to quote Felix. But once it made it to the journal, Rav Moshe Sternbach, who was not aware of the entire issue, said, oh my gosh, right? Maybe you're not Yotze with these oats. And therefore, it doesn't count as matzah, because oats is not one of the five grains. Later on, in volume 5 of the same Chuvus of Rav Moshe Sternbach, he did an about-face. He says, oh, I heard about oats, and you know what? People say that it's not one of the Chamesh Yasmin they dug on, but that goes against our whole Mesorah, and therefore it's obviously okay. He contradicted himself? I don't know. He contradicted himself about this. He did an about-face. I'm not sure. Now, there are suggestions that are made what a person should do who has celiac. The best thing to do, in all likelihood, it depends how bad. You have to speak to your doctor. You have to find out how bad the condition is. If you can eat a kezias, and we're not going to give a shiur tonight about how large a kezias is, but the dirty little secret is the real shiur of a kezias is about 1/10 of a machine matzah. That's not so much. Like, to sit there at the Seder with, you know, these big cards and measuring, I'm sure that the Chafetz Chaim did not do that. You eat an amount of matzah that you're sure, again, it's the only mitzvah d'oraisa of eating today. The first night of Pesach is a mitzvah d'oraisa to eat matzah. Eat a lot of matzah, fulfill the mitzvah, but at the same time, if a person will get sick from it, you could probably get by with eating a very small amount of matzah. Now, someone suggested on the website, Hurim, Torah Musings, someone suggested that maybe you can fulfill the mitzvah matzah based on the complicated procedure in the Mishnayos called Greira. Greira means that if you mix rice with wheat, so the rice takes on the halachic status of the wheat. And the Mishnayos go through exactly the ratio that you need. So someone said, even though Ashkenazim don't eat rice on Pesach, but maybe in a situation like this, we should make a mixture of rice and wheat. And that will help to solve the problem, because if you have celiac, you're just going to have a teeny bit of wheat in there, and it won't cause illness. It'll be wonderful. That was this rabbi's suggestion. There's one problem with that suggestion, which is that if you look at the OU website or any of the new kashrus websites, they point out that the rice in America is enriched. What that basically means is like this. Brown rice contains all of the vitamins in the outside part that become the exosperm that becomes brown. When they mill the rice and they take off that exosperm, they take away all of the vitamins. So white rice looks great. I just had it tonight for supper. But the white rice doesn't have a lot of vitamins, minerals, stuff that you need to live. So what they did is they decided, oh, we'll add vitamins and minerals. They have iron and vitamin B1 and vitamin B10 that they add to the coating of all the rice in America. Well, there's a problem. Anyone from the state of Iowa? No. But you know about ethanol anyway, because it's part of the presidential campaign, right? Presidential campaigns always begin with ethanol. Ethanol comes from corn or wheat. There are two sources of ethanol. The ethanol that they use to produce vitamin B1 is very often a wheat derivative. That ethanol ends up being part of the coating of standard rice in America, which means that if you want to be a Sfaradi and say, I will eat rice on Pesach because it's not chametz, it's only kitnios, in America you're afkahak the tzaris, because the rice is actually coated with genuine chametz. The OU on their website has a discussion about this. There are places, if you're really interested, there are places that you could get in Brooklyn, in some of the Sephardi communities. You could get rice with real good hashgacha for Pesach. That's not enriched and it's not coated. But this suggestion that you should just put some rice in your matzah, it basically means that you're eating matzah on Pesach that has chametz in it. And that's probably a bad idea. So that is the stage one in terms of fulfilling the mitzvah of matzah when the person has celiac, Rachmanu Litzlan. Any questions? You had a question for Tara. You got a bracha l'vatala, you make a bracha al-achilas matzah. If you just said amen, so you didn't fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah. I mean, that's pretty bad. I remember one time
if
I...
you can't do it, and then this is like at least maybe...
I said, if I can't do it, I can't do it. Sometimes I can't do certain mitzvos. Like Shnayim Mikra Vechatarga was the hardest mitzvah to do, no? Okay. It's only one like you're always starting, you never finish. But the fact is, it's hard. It's a difficult mitzvah. I understand. I can't do it. Fine. That's the basic story. Again, people who have celiac really are in a difficult bind if you assume like Professor Felix. If you assume like Rashi and like the other Rishonim that oat is one of the chameshes minei dagam, so you're okay. You just eat oat matzahs. Now, there is some other halachic issues with the oat matzahs in terms of maybe you can't fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with oat matzahs because it can't possibly become chametz in order to have something as matzah. Matzah means, by definition, that I'm towing that line. Right? I have the possibility of being chametz and then it doesn't become chametz. There's machlokes Rambam and Ramban about mei peros, whether I can make matzah out of fruit juices. According to the strict halacha, mei peros ein machmitzin. Fruit juice does not make chametz, no?
Fruit juice?
Fruit juice. I have grape juice matzahs, you can get them. Kedem makes grape juice matzahs, pure grape juice. They're supposed to be the most tasty things in the world. Ashkenazim don't eat it on Pesach because we're choshesh for a position of Rashi, that even though mei peretz does not become chametz, but it does become a lower level of chametz, chametz midrabban and called chametz nuksha. But for sick people, Ashkenazim would eat grape juice matzahs, egg matzahs, those are the famous ones, right? We would eat it. Now, the Rambam holds I can make matzah out of egg matzahs, or out of grape juice matzahs. The Rambam holds mei peros, right, you can use to create matzah, even though it won't possibly be chametz, according to the Gemara, because mei peros ein machmitzin, but I can use it to make matzah. The Ramban disagrees with the Rambam. The Ramban says that if it can't be chametz, it won't be matzah. It's impossible, no? You need to toe that line, according to the Ramban. So, the other issue that comes up is oat matzahs might not be yotzei in the midst of matzah with oat matzahs simply because it can't possibly become chametz. If there's no gluten, it can't have the chemical process that we don't understand what it is, but that makes chametz. So that's another issue. Let's move on to kitnios, okay? Kitnios is also based on the same Gemara. The Gemara tells us, go back to the top of this first sheet. There are five things I mentioned in the Mishnah that can become chametz, right? And we know that two of them are wheat and barley, and the other three are hard to identify. The Mishnah, Zok the Gemara, it's like five lines before the end of that first section. Mas nisan dolk Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, de ama orez min daganhu. The Mishnah goes against Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that orez, we are going to translate orez as rice, even though it's a machlokas Rashi and Tosvos in Brachos, where the orez is rice and dochen is millet, or orez is millet and dochen is rice, or a different type of millet. And the Magen Avraham paskins as a matter of halacha that we're not certain how we paskin, like Rashi or like Tosvos, and therefore the Magen Avraham says that if you have Yiras Shemaim, you don't eat rice. I had rice for supper, by the way. I also make two brachas before I eat rice. I have a vegetable and I have a cookie before I eat rice. That way, I'm definitely right, yotze. But the fact is, what? Well, millet is also going to be a berena fashos. Rice, we assume, is a berena fashos. generally speaking, we follow the Vilna Gaon and the Mishnah Brura that rice is orez, that's mentioned in the Gemara, and therefore it's a mizonos berein nefashos. Right. But Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri holds that orez min dagon, whatever orez is, right, let's say it's rice, it's one of the grains. And you are chayiv al chimutzo kares. And if it becomes chametz, and you eat it on Pesach, you are chayiv kares. It's not the tanya, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, oser ba'orez v'dochen, mipnei shekarov lahachmetz, etc. So our Mishnah that says that you're only yotze the mitzvah of matzah with these five grains, and therefore only these five grains can be chametz because the two are connected, our Mishnah is against Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says that rice is also one of the grains. And according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, you can eat matzah out of rice on Pesach. But we don't paskin like Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. That's what this Gemara is saying. Now, the practice of Ashkenazim, of not eating rice on Pesach, and when I speak about Ashkenaz, just word of introduction, Ashkenaz means Jews from European countries in this conversation, but there are different types, there are different cultures within Europe. We're not going to talk about Italy at all, but France, Tsarfas, is different than Germany, Ashkenaz. They spoke different languages. They had different rulers. They had different types of architecture. Not that I'd notice any difference, but okay. They had differences. And within France, or what we call France, there's another culture called Provence, which is the French Riviera. It's a really nice place. But it was a different halachic culture. What we will see is that there are differences. We're going to do a very brief overview of this topic, but there are differences in the minhag of kitnios between these three different halachic cultures. But as a general rule, you know you're Ashkenazi if you don't eat kitnios on Pesach. As a general rule, as opposed to Sephardim who eat rice on Pesach, who eat kitnios, right? That's the most basic thing. Like, everyone knows this. John Stewart knows this. Everyone, yeah. So that's a very hard question. The answer is probably something that is like a legume, it's like a bean, that can be made into flour, and that flour can bake a cake. That includes lots of stuff. That includes potatoes, that includes... Yes. So this is the problem that we are going to be addressing. Let's just move through the sources very, very quickly. The Gemara in Psachim speaks about how I need two tafshilin on the Seder plate, two cooked dishes, and according to according to Rav Huna, it's silka va'arosa, it's beets, and what we are translating as rice. So rice is on the Seder plate. They just have two cooked dishes on the Seder plate, just like we have two cooked dishes. We have a zroa and a beitza. But you don't need a zroa and a beitza. You could have, by the way, an orange on the Seder plate. The orange is not cooked. Adkan. But the fact is that the Gemara says, silka va'arosa, like beets and rice are on the Seder plate. And Rava tried to have rice on his Seder plate. That means, obviously, it's not chametz, right? You have it on the Seder plate. That's what the Gemara says. Now, there are Rishonim who felt that rice, although it is not chametz min haTorah, rice is some sort of chametz midrabanan. Rice is some sort of rabbinic chametz. These Rishonim all lived in a place called Provence, which is the French Riviera. Now, sometimes these Rishonim are quoted by other Rishonim. The Ritva, who is a Spanish Rishon, quotes Yesha Pirshu, Dehachikamar, Eino Bamli Dei Chimutz Gomor, Leschayev Allah HaKareis, Elonli Dei Nuksha, Ve'ikar Alayhu Isser Drabonon of Chamet. Zuck the Ritva, that there are some who explain that Orez, which we are saying is rice, does not become Chametz min HaTorah, but rabbinically does become Chametz. And as such, the practice of not eating rice on Pesach is just a practice to keep the halacha and not eat chametz midrabanan on Pesach. Right? Chametz nuksha, like chametz midrabanan, for example, if you have a type of paste that is somewhat edible, ayyadei hadchak, with great difficulty, you could eat it. That's called chametz nuksha. So the Ritva is quoting that there are some who say that rice is chametz nuksha. These people who are quoted by the Ritva are referred to by the Maram Chalava as being Chachmei HaTzarfasim, some French Rishonim. But the Maram Chalava probably did not distinguish between different parts of France. When we go into it in greater detail, we notice that in Provence, okay, south of France, Sefer HaMenucha, bottom of this third page. Sefer HaMenucha is Rabbeinu Manoach. We don't know his father's name. It might have been Yaakov, might have been Levi. But Rabbeinu Manoach wrote a commentary on the Rambam. It's printed in the Rambams on Sefer Ahava and Zmanim in the Franco Rambams, no? So Rabbeinu Manoach quotes a Sefer HaMin Hagos. The Sefer HaMin Hagos is a 12th century Rishon from Provence. That the Sefer Min Hagos says, Nahagu kala olam shalwecho zer onim bepesach, mipnei shehein machmitzin. Meaning in Provence, they did not eat what we call kitnios because it creates some sort of chametz. That was the practice in Provence. The most famous Rishon ever from Provence was the Ravid, Rabbi Abraham ben David of Paskiers, which is in Provence. The Ravid wrote on the Rambam. The Ravid died in 1197. No? The Ravid got the Rambam in 1192. And his last work in life was just jotting down a few notes on the Rambam to prove to Judaism that the Rambam should not be accepted as a halachic text. That the Rambam was making lots of mistakes. So the Ravid has a comment which may or may not be relevant for us. Sarah, you have a point? The Ravid's comment, right, again, the Rambam in Halacha Aleph says that in order to be chametz, it has to be one of the five grains. In Halacha Beis, the Rambam speaks about that if I make some sort of matzah out of meperos, out of fruit juice, so it doesn't come to chametz, etc. Right? Halacha Aleph is that you need five grains. Halacha Beis, about meperos. The Ravid in Halacha Beis, the way we have it printed, writes, Amar Avram, I underlined this, again, third page, Amar Avram, Ein davar zeh pashut, v'lo hakol modim bo, dini de'inos en chametz gomor, ein chay malchim uto kares, avon nuksha heva miha v'asar. The Ravid says, it's not real chametz, but it is chametz nuksha. It is semi, kind of, sort of, a little bit chametz. Drabonon chametz. Now, what's the Ravid talking about? The way we have the text of the Ravid, it's on Halacha Beis, which means that matzah made with fruit juice is chametz nuksha, which is our practice. Don't eat egg matzah on Pesach unless you're really sick. Right? That's the way we have the Ravid. But if you look in the Migdal Oz, Migdal Oz is, according to Chaim Soloveitchik, the most useless work ever written. He wrote like little notes on the Rambam, like no one ever uses it. This is like the only one I think that actually says something. The Migdal Oz writes the same, Rambam and Ravid, but if you read it carefully, the Migdal Oz is putting this Ravid on Halacha Aleph, not on Halacha Beis. Which means that what the Ravid is saying, the Ravid, the greatest Rishon ever from Provence, is saying that when I have something that is not one of the Chameshas Mine Dagon, something like rice that is not one of the five grains, Zok the Ravid, it becomes Chametz Midrabanan. And the Minig in Provence that we see from the Sefer Min Hagos is that they treated kitnios like Chametz. My grandmother, Lala Shalom, used to tell us this, no? I remember trying to convince my parents that they didn't have to sell like the rice and stuff before Pesach. And my grandma's like, of course you do, it's chametz, it's terrible. My grandma like would get very upset about stuff. I'm like, I don't think it's chametz. So maybe my grandma, she didn't come from Provence, she came from Poland. But the fact is, there were Rishonim in Provence who treated it like chametz. And what's interesting to note, there's a journal that comes out, a Torah journal that comes out from in Muncie, called the Or Yisrael Journal. Rabbi Gedalia Oberlander writes in it. Rabbi Oberlander notes that in Provence in the 12th century and early 13th century, they kept the minhag of kitneils. Once you get to the 14th century of Provence, in the Sefer Kolbel, and you get to the Sefer HaMichtam and other 14th century works in Provence, they are eating kitneils on Pesach in Provence. By the 15th century, Provence does not exist as a full culture. Everything, Provence is assimilated into other Jewish cultures. Now, the suggestion that's made is that precisely because in Provence they treated kitneos more severely than in other Jewish areas, right? In other words, in Provence they're saying that kitneos, rice, we'll say, is chametz, albeit chametz d'rabbanan. But once they're saying it's chametz d'rabbanan, so then they encounter gemaras. I have it on the Seder plate. How do they have chametz d'rabbanan on the Seder plate? What's going on here? So they say, oh, obviously the practice is wrong. And then they dismiss the practice. So precisely because they built it up to be an isser too severe, that's why the minhag of kitneos fell out of practice in Provence. In Provençal culture, they ate kitneos on Pesach. Although originally, they felt it was chametz. In the culture of Tsarfas, northern France, they never had an isser of kitneils on Pesach. Never. The main Rishon from northern France is Rabbi Yechiel of Paris. He is quoted by many other Rishonim. Paris is Paris, northern France. He ate kitneils on Pesach. In southern France, originally they treated it like chametz, then it moved away. In northern France, they never had it. In Rashi, you'll never find an isser of kitneils in Rashi. And we have lots of books from Basement Joshua Shal Rashi. You don't see any isser of kitneils at all. The place where the isser of kitneils really took off was in Germany. Now, the way it took off in part was because you have to understand that what sefer did the average Jew use in the 13th century? If I need to know halacha, what book did I take out? So there was one book that was printed more than any other book in that time period, the Smak, Sefer Mitzvahs Katan, of Rabbi Yitzchak of Korvil, no? And the Smak had notes by Rabbeinu Peretz of Korvil, who... The Smak was like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch for the medieval Jew. In fact, every printing of the Smak was divided up into seven sections. You're supposed to read one section every day and chazer the entire book once a week. And Jews did that. It's not such a big book. It's like 30 pages. It's a small little book. That's a Smak. The Smak basically discusses the question of kitneos on Pesach. Okay. Here, first of all, he writes in the Smak, Mori Rabbeinu Yechiel, on the third line, Hayenoeg lecho bePesach pol halovan shekorin favish. That's like fava beans. He ate, right? Rabbeinu Yechiel of Paris ate it on Pesach. And he quoted this on the Gedolim. And he brings proofs that even rice, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says it's chametz, and the Gemara says, we don't, less the chosh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. Right? No one's worried about Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri. So, says the Smak, really, kitneos should be permitted. Mihu, kasha hadavar ma'od lahatir davar shenohagin bo ha'olam iser mimei chachamim hakadmonim. That's the key line. Jews from very ancient times, we don't know exactly from when, but Jews refrained from eating kitneos on Pesach. In Germany, at least. And all the German Rishonim work very hard to say what's the reason for this practice. But what they're doing is they are defending a practice. Now, just in the way halacha works, this is classic Germany, no? You know Germany down the street? Breuers? Every minhag that they have, they keep to the nth degree. That's been German culture forever. Right? If you look in Jacob Katz's book, right? Germany was very into the nohag. Whatever people do, has to be correct halachically. So German Rishonim say, how come our great-grandparents killed their children during the Crusades? Something that has zero halachic justification. They killed their own kids. When the Crusades were coming, German Jews would slaughter their own kids rather than have their kids convert to a different religion. This is found in all the German Balei HaTosfos. They did it. Now, many people would say they were wrong, but the Germans are into defending their minhagim. If they did it, it's got to be right. This is a pretty extreme case, no? Pretty extreme. Agreed? What? The kids don't think it's such a good minhag. But the fact is, German Jews defend their minhagim. And there are reasons that are cited in German Rishonim, in the Mordechai, in the Smak, etc. Right? There are reasons that are cited to explain why it is that they don't eat kidneys on Pesach. And they say, well, sometimes you have wheat that grows near the beans. Based on crop rotation, if you want a field to maintain its strength to produce better crops for the next year, you can't grow the same crop every year in the field, no? You have to rotate. Well, sometimes when you rotate crops, you're going to have little bits of wheat that are left with your beans. So based on that, they don't have kitnios, because sometimes wheat is left inside. There are other reasons why they would aser the kitnios, because it looks like bread. I can make something that looks like bread, and therefore they said it's aser. Now, the fact is that in Germany, the tradition of kitnios was there. The tradition forbidding kitnios was there, and they're working hard to explain that tradition. It did not exist in France, in northern France. In southern France, originally they felt it was chametz, then they moved to having it not existing. But what happens with the assimilation of cultures, just like most of us don't know or the authentic minhagim that we have from whichever parts of Europe we're from, because we lost it, that happened in the medieval period also. And we all became Ashkenazed. And therefore, kitnios took over the Jewish world, of the European Jewish world, with the exception of Spain. In Spain, in Sparad, they never had the prohibition of kitnios. In fact, the Beis Yosef, when he deals with kitnios, I think I have a section here called Sparad somewhere, the Beis Yosef writes, the bottom line, "Les dechosh ledvarim halalu zulasi ha-ashkenazim." No one besides those Ashkenazim cares about kitnios. Right? Now, what this means, it seems to me, and my Rebbeim will pass in this way. Yeah, let's actually, maybe we'll just say two or three more points very quickly. And then, when they were looking for reasons to forbid forbid kitnios on Pesach, so they came up with some interesting reasons. One reason is something that sounds like a Seinfeld episode, which is that no one enjoys eating beans. And you wouldn't have Simchas Yontif. It's like you can't make friends with salad, right? No one would have Simchas Yom Tov if they would be able to eat kitnios. So as such, they forbade eating kitnios because they wanted you to enjoy Yontif. What? But you can eat them on Sukkot. That's the question. So there were some who would not eat kitnios on Sukkot also, because you have to have Simchas Yontif, right? That's obvious. Now, the funniest thing that came up in this process is years later in the 17th century, when Rabbi Yaakov Emden writes in the Maruk Tzia, he quotes from his father, who is the Chacham Tzvi, that the Chacham Tzvi said that this practice of eating kitnios is a terrible of not the practice of not eating kitnios is a terrible practice, the Chacham Tzvi felt. And one of the reasons why, he said, is because, one second, it takes away people's Simchas Yontif by not having kitnios, because there's nothing to eat on the holiday. Hey, do you remember as a kid, like, thinking that Pesach is, like, the worst yontif because, like, you're always hungry?
Yeah. Well, I think that's where before there was refrigeration and importation of fruit and vegetables from South, and pre-potatoes, what were they eating?
Right. So what they were eating was a heck of a lot of matzah. Now, there are a few issues that come up when you eat a heck of a lot of matzah. One issue is, and Rabbi Yaakov Emden is worried about this also, that if you have to bake so much matzah, you're going to end up possibly violating the Isra of Chametz. Because right, matzah is a dangerous material. Right, it's radioactive in many ways. So the fact is that there were some who wanted to outlaw the Isra of Kitniyos. Ad Hayom Hazeh, the conservative movement around 10 years ago, came up with a tshuva trying to get rid of the prohibition of Kitniyos. There's a group in Israel, Beit Hillel, who has published some tshuvos back and forth about whether we should maintain the Isra of Kitniyos. Simple Ashkenazi Pesach, obviously we maintain the Isra of Kitniyos, and today there's no real concern that we're going to starve on Pesach. You could have Pesachtik bagels. You could have anything you want. Not that you want to, but you can have it. So that's another point. Now the Vilna Gaon, Halacha L'maisa, so we have the Isra of Kitniyos, but because for Ashkenazim, the Isra of Kitniyos is based on just what Jews used to do, and then we're trying to find reasons for that, so it seems, and this is the Pesach that the Chak Yaakov has in Shulchan Aruch, and Rav Moshe Feinstein assumes this way LaHalacha, that any food that was not around when the minhag developed cannot be forbidden as kitniyos. Now, quinoa, right, is the example. I eat quinoa in Pesach. It's very good. I mean, it actually tastes like nothing. You have to put stuff in. But the fact is, the Moshe Feinstein said that peanuts are not kitniyos. Now, my parents remember people eating peanuts on Pesach. Today, no one has it. None of the... Somehow, the practice developed that we don't eat peanuts on Pesach. No? Corn. The practice developed. Corn was also not really around. I think maize, that American corn, is a New World crop. Right? So it couldn't be around at that time. But what that means is, technically speaking, we're working on minhagim, and a new fruit, a new food, we should work very hard to make sure we eat it on Pesach so it doesn't become usser. Because of what happened to peanuts and what happened to corn. And...
I'm on.
What?
I'm on. I adopt a certain quinoa, which I don't particularly like, every year on Pesach, just for exactly this reason.
I think it's actually very important. Now, you do have to make sure that the quinoa they get for Pesach has kashrut and Pesach hashgacha. Because quinoa in Peru does grow near where they grow wheat. So you have to make sure that there is kashrut and Pesach hashgacha on it. You can get in Costco. It's not so hard. It's really not such a problem. Now, because kitniyos is fundamentally a minhag, we are making kitniyos for cholim, if you're sick. Kids are technically, halachically considered sick all the time. So someone I used to work with wanted to give his kids Rice Krispies on Pesach, because that's like the only thing they eat. Technically, that's mutter, but you have to make sure that your Rice Krispies is not enriched. So you have to buy your Rice Krispies from a batch that's made by one of those Sephardi groups in... You can't get Kellogg's. You have to get it from one of those Sephardi groups in Brooklyn with a real hashgacha, because rice has the issue of being enriched. Because it's only a minhag, we assume it's batel berov. If you have the majority of a food, not kitniyos, so then it's all going to be fine, because anything that's aser mikoach minhag is going to be batel berov. As such, if an Ashkenazi is invited to a Sephardi's house on Pesach, you should try to avoid it, because you should try to maintain the minhag of Ashkenazim of not eating kitniyos. But technically speaking, the food is going to be kosher, even if the Sephardi used that pot within 24 hours, no? Because whatever kitniyos is in the Sephardi's pot beforehand will be batel in your food. It'll be batel berov. That seems to be the strict halacha. There's a lot more to say about these topics, but any questions? Yeah.
Can you say rural, I mean like 51%?
50.0001%, right. That's it.
Do you think the fact that we're mixing in the modern era, where Ashkenazim and Sephardim are coexisting aside one another, whether it be in America or in Israel, should have any relevance to the Safa Halacha?
So,
as in, it looks like it's kind of, when we're dealing with it starts initially with in halachic sources, but things kind of stray one way or another, depending on where you're living.
I don't think we are at that stage. It's conceivable that we'll get there. But I think right now we have separate chief rabbis in Israel, Ashkenazim and Sephardim. There are separate halachic communities. Some of the arguments that are being made to undo the Isser of Kitnios is based on what you're saying. But I don't think we're there. Okay, the last thing I want to just say to conclude is both of these conversations tonight about oats and about Kitnios really hits at one of the fundamental lessons of Pesach, which is you sit at the Seder and it's all about a Mesorah. It's about handing down the tradition. Right? I remember all the stuff my father says at the Seder. I try to say it to my kids. That's the idea of Pesach. So, yes, we sometimes look askance at like a minhag like Kitnios. It's like, come on, why is this forbidden? It doesn't really make any sense. But the answer is when you recognize that a Yontif of Pesach is about a Mesorah, so then it makes sense to maintain this minhag. Of course, if I take the Mesorah argument, I would say that I keep matzah out of oats as well. Because the Mesorah Jews traditionally translated Shibola Shul as being oats. But whatever you say, the argument of Mesorah is an argument, I think, that's at the core of what the Yontif of Pesach stands for. I thank you for listening. I hope this program really works. It looks very exciting. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz, for a wonderful, fascinating, interesting share.